Welcome to Family Voices. My name is Patty Barron, and I am the Director of Family Readiness at the Association of the United States Army. Last month, we had the pleasure of presenting a military spouse employment panel during AUSA Now, and I really hope that you did tune in to our amazing virtual annual meeting. We received such positive feedback regarding this topic that we decided to dig in a bit deeper. And today, it is really my extreme pleasure to introduce our guest, Rosemary Williams. Rosemary and I first met when she was the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Military Community and Family Policy. And if you can say that all at once without taking a breath, you're better than I am. I can honestly tell you that she brought that office out of the Pentagon and to the people. She was amazing in that role. Her humor, her warmth, amazing intellect were perfect for that position. But it was really her ability to connect with military spouses that really came through and really, really made a difference in that position. So welcome, Rosemary. So happy that you're here. If you could just tell our audience a little bit more about yourself, they'll get to know you like I do.
Patty, thank you. And thank you so much for inviting me. I'm a big fan of you and your work, and I'm just thrilled to be here. And of course, AUSA. Before I was the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Military Community Family Policy, you're right, the first 400 times you say that it's hard and then it gets easier. I also had the great good fortune of serving as a senior advisor to Secretary Eric Shinseki when he was Secretary of Veterans Affairs. I was his senior advisor for strategic communications. And prior to that, I enjoyed a 20 some odd year career in broadcast journalism. When I left DOD, I went back to VA as the Assistant Secretary of Intergovernmental and Public Affairs because I felt very strongly that this journey that military families go on doesn't end when the uniform is hung up. I mean, there's another whole journey as a veteran and a veteran family, caregivers and survivors. And I felt strongly about that.
And Ro, I think you are also married to a Marine, aren't you?
Yes, I am. And so the long-standing joke, we've learned to laugh at it anyway, the long-standing joke in our family is, you know, John retired in 2006. And people say, well, how long did transition take for John? And we both answer, we'll let you know.
Exactly. I think for the first 3 years when Mike retired, we couldn't say the word retirement. So we always say that we're transitioning. So I totally agree. Ro, you've been involved in so many projects and you're currently working with Deloitte on military spouse employment, which I know is really near and dear to your heart. What can you tell us about what Deloitte Military Spouse Initiative is all about?
I'm so glad you asked and thank you. We have two pieces to the Military Spouse Initiative. First is the internal piece, and this is Deloitte taking care of military spouses, not just for the moral imperative and the national security issue, which we're well versed about, but also because it's good business sense. You know from your own experience and from your own work, Patty, that military spouses have all the soft skills, many of the hard skills that employers are looking for today, and grit, determination, dependability, a cheerful countenance, and also just willingness and ability to solve almost any problem put in front of them. So Deloitte has made the Military Spouse Initiative a very important program internally to ensure that the military spouses that are employed by Deloitte PCS smoothly, they have the support, they get to stay employed by Deloitte even when they go to some of these garden spots around the world as military spouses. That's the internal piece. Externally facing, they really truly believe in helping to solve government's problems. That's the main mission of the part of Deloitte I work for. And when they got wind of military families, they dove right in. And I'm excited to tell you that with the paper you refer to about military spouse employment, we've also looked at the hard to find data around suicide in military families. We're looking at a variety of topics. They call it a bold move, but they really, truly want to let spouses and families and the military know that Deloitte is here to help solve the problems and iron out the issues as well as possible using the remarkable brain power over there at what is the largest management company in the world, I think.
That's so exciting to hear because, as you mentioned, and I think many of us know, there is not just one issue that you can put people into a box and say, okay, here's your issue, deal with it. Military life is just this plethora of things that you have to deal with. And I think by taking a holistic approach to the lifestyle, Deloitte is absolutely right on track. And that's super exciting. And of course, we're thrilled that you're there. You have been involved just recently with the release of a very important report about military spouse unemployment, I believe. And there were a couple of surprising nuggets that were identified, and I would love it if you could tell us a little bit more.
You bet. First, we laid out an assumption about the family support system that DOD provides, which is remarkable since it's so well-funded and so many people are dedicated to it. But some of these assumptions are no longer accurate. The non-serving spouse is always available to support service-related needs. That's just not the case anymore. Nor is one stream of income enough for a family to thrive. And there's some real hard numbers around that. The modern military family resembles nothing of the former generations, all the way back to when military families were first issued to the Army in the all-volunteer force following the Vietnam War. So we took a real good look at this enduring problem of employment, which has hovered at some pretty staggering numbers since it started measuring, about 24% unemployment, and for underemployment, somewhere between 31 and 51%. And then we also took a look at employment as financial security, and we kind of lifted the veil on what it costs for a middle-class family of four to afford a three-bedroom house, family health insurance, a semester of public college, and a vehicle on roughly 30 weeks. It can be afforded roughly 30 weeks of a single middle-class income if you go back to 1985. But in present day, it would take 53 weeks of the same family to afford that same. So for everyone, dual income is now standard in America, and military families are not spared. Also, employment is personal. It's a way to stay connected. It's personal growth. This generation and generations to follow marry at their education and achievement level. So if you want a hard-charging cyber warrior, you're going to get a spouse with the same level of ability and, by the way, the same expectation. And we're seeing employment is about retention. They're starting to get some hard numbers, more than 71% recruitment and retention. More than 71% of American youth today are ineligible to serve, largely due to education, legal, drug use. Even those who are qualified, 25% wouldn't make health or height, body weight standards. So now you've got quite a chokehold on recruiting. And when it comes to retention, the folks who want to stay in, they're hitting their peak earning years at the same time the spouse is. So it's getting harder and harder to stay in if you have a spouse that's unemployed. Further, one of the eye-openers for the report for me was that location plays such a major part. I never thought of this before, and I was kind of embarrassed about it. And basically, we were looking at military spouse employment as a national issue, DOD, but at the same time, it's really about the local labor markets. I mean, picture the difference between finding a job at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, as Fort Belvoir, you know, right around the corner here. It's very, very different. I mean, I can't imagine what the labor market is in Lawton, Oklahoma, although I do actually know because the team who did the research told me it's grim. So now when we have a better sense of it, we have a better picture of some of the solutions that well over half of all military spouses live in areas with below average availability of work. So our research showed that of the military spouses who live on or near the largest bases, 44% live in labor markets with negative availability of jobs, meaning there are fewer jobs available than there are job seekers. So we dug a little bit deeper from there, but it was this notion that we should start to look for local solutions and also local data to understand the problem more broadly that really rung my bell. Very exciting stuff.
You're right on target. I mean, I looked at the charts that were in the report, and certainly if you're living near the Pentagon, if you're living at JBLM, some of these other big cosmopolitan areas, your chances of getting employment are better. My goodness, that's not where they put these military posts or installations, is it? You know, it's always like put them way out there, and there's not an awful lot of opportunity. However, I would imagine that COVID, if nothing else, has given us the lens with which to view remote work. And remote work is doable, and you can trust people to work. As a matter of fact, I would imagine, Earl, that both you and I are probably working more hours now than we were when we were behind a desk in an office. And I know I'm kind of throwing you this little curveball, but what are your thoughts around the remote work possibilities after hopefully COVID-19?
Thank you, Patty. It's a great question. I will tell you that I'm with you. It just seems like everybody's working harder and longer these days. And I'm now to the point where I don't even want to see my dining room table anymore. So I have to find another place to work because all of a sudden it's become a negative space because of all this work. But I'm not complaining. I have a job and a great job, and I'm happy to have that. And to your point about remote work, at Deloitte, we had a little bit of an advantage. They expected us to work remotely a good deal of the time. They didn't care where we worked. We just had to get the job done. Not so much at DOD and other companies. It really is about, you know, putting your butt in that seat and you're clocking in at the right time and you're not going home until the end of the day. If there's a silver lining to this absolute mashugana and travesty of the pandemic, it's that it's caused a paradigm shift in how work gets done. We need to work from home. And now that work from home has removed doubts and negative assumptions about working remotely. And it's helped organizations, large and small, realize the value of less traditional workplace arrangements. So we're playing around with right now a study around co-working and how it relates to remote work. And I got to tell you, there was no way when I worked at DOD that there was going to be remote work. Never going to happen. You know, the firewalls, the technology, blah, blah, blah. The list was as long as my short arm. And I will tell you that when forced, guess what happened? The work got done, and it's still getting done. And we don't exactly know when we're all going to be able to go back to work. I call all these stages the next normal. You know, people, oh, it's a new normal. No, no, just wait a few months and you're going to have some other situation. So currently, while remote work can help remote spouses both access new job opportunities outside their immediate area and take those jobs with them when they move, more needs to be done to ensure they have productive workspaces and other resources so they can get the work done in the way that both the organization and the spouse want to get done. And if I can, I'll tell you a little bit about the efforts that DOD could do based on the research we've done. We first want to make sure that spouses have the tools necessary for remote work, such as, you know, the computers, the webcams, video conferencing software, even co-working spaces, as well as a strong social support network in the form of others working in the same location. So this idea of connectedness goes right to mental health. When you're remote working, you don't want people so isolated that it impacts their wellness. We know that connection with others makes us stronger emotionally and reinforce our mental wellness. And also, I will tell you that spouses right now who are listening, you know, and I know, Patty knows, you don't always get the broadband you're looking for when you're living on base. Now, 72% of our families live outside the gate, but if you're trying to do remote work or if you're an entrepreneur, you're going to need that good bandwidth when you're on base. The next is accelerating the long sought after streamlining of licensing requirements and interstate transfers. This is recommended by the 2020 NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. So we're feeling encouraged, and more of the top brass are talking about that. And gosh knows, AUSA has done their part, and for that, we're all of us are eternally grateful. Next is developing a consortium. We recommend developing a consortium of businesses partnered with the MSEP program, the Military Spouse Employment Partnership Program, to even more effectively offer military spouses alternative opportunities if they can't retain the position when they have to PCS. Next is generating future of work data-driven fact sheets and support materials to educate employers to highlight both the quantitative and the qualitative benefits of hiring military spouses. We still have reluctant supporters, what I call reluctant advocates. Yes, let's hire more military spouses, but they're not. And this is an opportunity to drive innovative solutions. And I think that if we just distribute some information, also a little peer pressure. Hey, fill in the blank. This is what this company's do, who happens to be a competitor. And then last, I would say, and I like this one a lot, offering job-centric upskilling programs to military spouses to help them gain the necessary skills for in-demand jobs in different areas. Patty, back in the day, you and I did not have this opportunity that said, oh, your resume is strong here, here, and here, but gosh, if you were just an expert or if you had some training on this one capability, you'd be a shoo-in. Well, now with upskilling, which is just what it sounds like, spouses have a remarkable opportunity now to shift their own paradigm and become better equipped for those specific jobs that require specific training. So we're very excited about the recommendations, all within reach, no pie in the sky stuff. Just a lot of, hey, we just need to change the mindset of the modern military family while we're riding this crazy wave called the pandemic.
I think that one thing that really struck me was how we have to not only think about remote work as a more of an option for military spouses. Certainly, we're seeing that that's a possibility. But it's how do you set someone up for success? If you've got toddlers at home, what is the childcare situation looking like for you? if you are going to be isolated because you're living out in the country and, you know, you've got the broadband, but you're not in touch with any human being for hours at a time, then what does the shared workspace maybe look like for military spouses? So there's an awful lot more that we need to unpack in order to support a military spouse who is now a part of the modern military family. And I love that. I love that term because we're not who we used to be. A lot of the issues are the same, but the way that we approach them, the way that we handle them, the way that we think about them are very much different. It kind of leads me to my next question, and that is that the DOD, the Army, the other services have done an awful lot in the last, I would say, 5 to 7 years to support military spouse employment. But a lot of these resources are not used very well. So from your perspective, why do you think that is? Why aren't they used well? Which one would you kind of point the spouse to at least starting out with so that they can have some level of success?
Such a good question. I still sleep with one eye open as to why the My Career Advancement account, MyCAA, is underutilized by junior spouses. This is a non-competitive $4,000 for junior college or accreditation, you know, veterinarian assistants or any number of approved programs. And by my take, it's not just a great way to get a career started or a little extra money to, you know, make life a little bit easier, but also how you sell, you know, it's mental wellness and feeling value. And also, I hate to say it, but when I was 19 to 24 years old, around the age of some of these young spouses, I was just pure trouble. I mean, I was getting into trouble. It was following me. And I, no matter what I did, I was, you know, and you want to have something of value in your life to keep you on a straight path of being the person you want to be, is how I'd put it. And all kinds of good reasons. So that bothers me that it's underutilized. And I think it's because we do such a really lousy job of reaching out to these young spouses, mostly women. They live and thrive online. So let's stop printing flyers and let's start using some of the algorithms that digital advertising have been using forever very successfully. Let's leverage peer testimonials. If I'm 24 years old and I hear from someone who looks like me and sounds like me that this was a good thing and she loves pets and she loves animals and now she's a veterinarian assistant, you've got my attention. But if it's big DOD telling me, all right, whatever. And I hate to say it. So that's it. And I would say to every military spouse, whether you have a great job now or not, if you have your foot in a career or not, create a profile in the CECO program, in MySECO, My Spouse Employment Education and Career Opportunities. And this program, in the words of Mrs. Carter, the former SecDef spouse, says, this doesn't exist anywhere else in the country. It just doesn't. You can get resume writing. You can get coaching for interviews. You'll get a database of over 1.5 million jobs have been posted with CECO. You'll get your own coach. So it doesn't matter where you are in your career. Even if you don't think you want a job, at some point, you may have to go back to work. You might as well make it something that you're going to like. Even people who just need enough money for travel, soccer, and ballet lessons, make it something that you're going to want to go back to and build on when you're ready to work. You know, and DOD is not off the hook, to be honest. I mean, I think that there's some policy changes that we recommend DOD look at. And one is increasing entrepreneurial support via professional networking groups, mentorship programs to help the spouses connect to each other and just get some of these more experienced entrepreneurs in to mentor the younger ones. We're seeing a real spike in interest of entrepreneurship. And no surprise, military spouses are by their nature entrepreneurial. Next, provide education programs curated for each major phase of business maturation to help the entrepreneurs start, grow, and succeed in their business. These education programs can be internships, apprenticeships, and very valuable for certain types. Next, improving access to resources, much like you mentioned, Patty, co-working spaces, micro-lending, advising, professional services. Next, providing co-working spaces for innovation and camaraderie, like we talked about. Business accelerators, incubators for military spouses. Now, these are all entrepreneurs, but with everything we've done for employment that's out there and reachable that the spouses can tap into, let's also take care of the modern military spouse who wants to be an entrepreneur. And what happens then is with all the employment programs and new entrepreneurship programs, now military spouses can reinvent themselves as needed and necessary and as they desire, as they create these wonderful futures for their professional selves.
I love what you said about upscaling and about really focusing in on your own skills, because you might not be ready or able to work at certain times in a military life cycle, but you can work on skills that will help you get a better paying or a higher level job when you are ready to work. And the entrepreneurship piece is just exploding everywhere. Military spouses really are trying to take control of their lives in some way, shape, or form. So I absolutely agree with you. And it's just very exciting to hear you talk in the way that you do, Ro. I mean, we all know that you're one of our leaders when it comes to these types of issues. And also to know that Deloitte has our back, as do other organizations, when it comes to military spouse employment. But besides military spouse employment, what other issues, in your opinion, are at the tipping point of being a real issue that we have to pay attention to when it comes to military families?
Thank you for asking, Patty. And when you mentioned that about upskilling, it's one great thing about upskilling is if you are of a certain age and you've been working for a while, you know what it's like to train your next boss. And it's demoralizing. Instead, these organizations that say, hey, you know what you're missing? You're missing this one thing, and we're going to pay for you to go do this, or we're going to find a way, or you're going to find a way to do it and get away from that horrible cycle of people being promoted over you for a lack of just one certification or capability. In other areas, Patty, I'm watching, like all of us who are in this space, and I know you're included because I'm watching you and your good work, of course, and that is food insecurity. It's popping up in surveys like the Military Family Advisory Network. They have terrific surveys. They're done by Dr. Kimball, Shelley Kimball, and they're just outstanding. Anyways, pre-COVID, we're seeing signs of food insecurity, so I would presume the situation has worsened. Now, military families are better off than most families in some regard, but this is still, we want to be able to understand the issue and iron it out before it becomes too difficult. And so what worries me about the food insecurity issue is that you really can't point to one place at DOD that is responsible for food insecurity. It's kind of a question mark as to where it will land. So I'm hoping DOD, and of course, with some help from Congress, they'll find the right people to pin the rose on. I think housing is still something to keep a close eye on. I think that the tie between military readiness and family readiness needs to be strengthened with data so that the service chiefs on down can truly understand the impact of a healthy family on a service member. From the beginning of time, a warrior could not truly do his or her job if they were worried about folks back home. So there should be enough data now to be able to strengthen that tie and talk about it more definitively, I think. Those are the bigger issues that I'm keeping a close eye on. Childcare, of course, it's always going to be an issue. And that's also a local issue. It varies from base to base. And we should start to look at sort of local solutions to that national problem as well.
Thank you, Ro. I would absolutely agree with all of that as well. The one other area that I might add to your list, and I'm planting a seed with you because you're very knowledgeable and very well connected, and that is, what has the impact of COVID-19 been on our female service members who are either single parents or in dual military homes, and a lot of the caregiving falls on their shoulders? So I'm just going to throw that out there.
I'm so glad you did, Patty, and you're 100% right. We're starting to see early data about the impact of COVID-19 on our female service members. And it, much like we are seeing the non-military connected workforce, which is tracking remarkable drop in employment rates of women with children. So you're 100% right, keeping an eye on that.
So, Ro, we're getting near the end of our time, and it's just been such a joy to talk to you. I want to make sure that I give you the opportunity to say anything that you hadn't gotten a chance to say yet or that you might want to add before we close.
Oh, thanks, Patty. And I really enjoyed our conversation. Your listeners should know that the Army has no greater advocate for military families than Patty Barron. What you've been able to do and the convenings that you chief, the issues you bring to the table with grace and elegance, you are a massive velvet hammer. And it's wonderful to call you colleague and friend. And your listeners need to know that families are in very good hands with you as advocate. I would add that, you know, in these uncertain times, the nation relies on its military more than ever to be ready for whatever may come, whether it's, you know, traditional warfare on land, cyberspace, or look at us fighting a global pandemic. For those in uniform, for them to train and work hard to stay ready, and most do not serve without support. Military spouses help keep families together. They allow service members to do their jobs without the burdens of worry. And to foot stomp, these military spouses, all military spouses, are deserving of support in finding meaningful employment, not only for their sacrifices, but to keep the military family strong, resilient, and in the fight. As I like to say, it's not just a moral imperative, it's also a matter of national security. So with that, just thank you so much for the time to talk about one of my favorite topics of all time and to share a little bit of time with you and your listeners.
Thank you so much. You have been such a fantastic guest, and as always, super fun to talk to you. But more importantly, you're absolutely right with a lot of the points that you made, and we want you to come back at a future date because I think that we could continue the conversation on so many other topics, Ro. So this is an invitation to have you back in the near future, I hope.
Oh my gosh, count me in. Absolutely.
Fantastic.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. The Army Matters podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association, member-supported, Army-connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hooah.